Welcome to the Soul Mama Podcast, where we have deep and honest conversations about healing, awakening, spirituality, and wellness on this sacred journey of conscious motherhood. We ask how we can walk this path in a way that nourishes, elevates, and heals us and our children. We deserve space and time to slow down and tune in to our hearts, to heal ourselves, and to honor our highest callings. It starts with us. I'm Nahanda Truscott-Reed. I'm a mother, holistic wellness coach, writer, and speaker, and I am passionate about all of the ways we can raise our consciousness and come into more alignment and power as women and mothers, so we can heal the past and make more empowered choices for the future. Our stories and voices matter. It is my intention that these conversations inspire, motivate, and move you on your own Soul Mama journey. I'm so honored that you're here. Hey, Mama, I hope you are well. Today, we are talking about sex. Yep, that's right. I wanted to go there. It comes up over and over again for me personally in my relationship to myself and motherhood, but for so many of the women that I've had the honor and the privilege of serving on the Soul Mama journey as well. Because motherhood foundationally changes our bodies. It changes our physiology. It changes our relationship to ourselves. It changes the ways that we experience pleasure. It changes the way that we navigate in our partnership. It changes how we might want to receive intimacy. So much changes when we become mothers, whether we've given birth vaginally or abdominally. We are going through a transformation. And so the ways that we experience sexuality and pleasure inherently have to change. And so I wanted somebody to come on who could speak and explore that and unpack it with us. And I decided to invite on Alexis Lee. So Alexis is the woman behind Style Me Sunday. She's a fashion blogger, influencer, content creator. She hosts podcasts. She does panel discussions. She does TV. She's a former midwife. She's a divorced mother of two girls, and she was born and raised in London. She's of Caribbean and British heritage. She is the author of Feeling Myself, which was published in 2022 by Penguin. And so when I came across this book and I realized that it was not only Alexis's personal journey through unpacking all of these taboos around motherhood and sexuality and shame and trauma, but it was also speaking to so much of the collective limitations that we place on ourselves as women. And so in this conversation, you're going to hear us talking about all of those things. We do mention trauma. We do mention how to heal and to navigate that. We also talk about how motherhood for some can be a gateway. It can be an opening. It can be an awakening. And for others, it can be an experience of shutting down and closing down sexually. I know I've experienced both of those experiences with two of my children. So we speak to those places that might be hard to acknowledge. And there is also some swearing. So if you do have little kids, I would recommend you listen through headphones or just be aware that there is some swearing through this conversation. But it is an important one. I feel like foundationally coming back into our place of power as women and as mothers, we really need to be able to face how we feel about sex, about our sexuality and our sensuality. And Alexis was a beautiful guest to do that with. So without further ado, enjoy, and I look forward to speaking to you again next week. Welcome to the podcast, Alexis. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
I always like to just give listeners a context as to how I meet some of my guests. And we had the pleasure of being in some healing circles together through mutual friends. And from that time that I saw you just kind of radiating energy and honesty and vulnerability, I was like, you know what? We have to bring you on to the Soul Mama podcast. So it's so nice to finally have you here.
But for those of you who don't know you, I'd love if you could just intro yourself and your work and what you do in the world.
Yes, of course. And yeah, when we did meet, I was literally crying, just constantly crying the whole time. So that's my memory of that. But
it's okay, a shortcut to intimacy.
It is. So I'm Alexis Lee. I have recently changed my name. I've dropped the Natalie. And I run a business called Soul Me Sunday. Ooh, where do I start? There's a lot of strands to the business. Started off on Instagram, started off as a blog for mothers, fashion. And so I did kids fashion as well, but then it's evolved into so much more. I've written a book called Feeling Myself, where I talk about sexual shame. I have done a TV program and been part of a hosting show where we style people. I run manifesting courses. I've got a healing space called Healing Myself, a podcast called Feeling Yourself. I can't
So much going on.
Yeah, there's enough. That's enough to start with.
Well, I think you're the embodiment of just multi-hyphenates. You know, like when we speak about that, it's like, yeah, there isn't a label that's going to define me. I do all the things that I'm passionate about. And so, yeah, it feels really aligned that so many of the things that you feel so strongly about are exactly what women and mothers who are on a healing journey are navigating, you know, whether it's that loss of identity and then who am I? How does that manifest in my style? But also in a really more deep way, how does that impact my sense of self, my body confidence, the way I show up in the world, how I show up in my motherhood. And that's what I wanted to talk about. You kind of jumped across your book there and I have a copy in my hand. And it was really a journey to read this because I knew some things that you had shared when we'd met in person. But you really use your life as a tapestry to weave in so many of the issues that modern women are facing in the West. And I really want to speak today to the impact of motherhood on our sexuality. Let's begin, because you give a whole two chapters, one to the body and how your relationship with your body changed after motherhood, and the other one about motherhood itself and that journey. And here at Soul Mama, we are all about how we can consciously and intentionally heal our way through these milestones and through these, what I call rites of passage, that we have to face seemingly in this journey of motherhood. And it feels like body, sexuality, and shame are some of the biggest ones. So I would love to hear from you, what impact did motherhood have on your sexuality?
I think motherhood was the portal for me to address my sexuality and open up my sexuality. I think once I became a mother, I was faced with a mirror that was seemingly unfiltered and untainted by society. So I had a chance to look again at all of the things that I had acquired along the way, and start to investigate and understand what was mine, what was others, what needed to be returned back to sender. And it was a real eye-opening journey and start for me. So motherhood has given me a lot of things, but the biggest thing is it has opened up a whole new world for me.
And so I want to take it almost back to the beginning, because you speak about the impact of birth specifically. And depending on how women have labored, there is always going to be a healing process that the body has to navigate through. And that is often met with the pressure that women feel that they are supposed to still be their same sexual selves that they were pre-motherhood, that they're supposed to have sex as regularly and as often and in the same ways that they did before they became mothers. And we know that the truth is that you have left your whole body. Like, it's literally an out-of-body experience. There is no returning to pre-child self. And everything physiologically, spiritually, emotionally has transformed. So yeah. You speak really honestly about that pressure that you held yourself to in terms of your own expectations of how you would feel, how soon you might recover, and how quickly you might resume sexual intimacy with your then husband. Speak to me a little bit about that part of the journey, that early postpartum motherhood phase, and how sex figured in that chapter.
I think women in general are put under a lot of pressure. I think we have lost sense of ourselves in that journey. I think we've lost the connection with ourselves, and we don't listen to our healing process and what's happening for us, because you seemingly open yourself up to everyone's opinions, everyone's input as soon as you have a child. And when it's your first child, I think it's really hard to sift through the shit and figure out what you listen to and what you don't listen to. And so therefore it becomes quite overwhelming, that those missiles of opinions that are just like coming for you, and you're just like, oh, what do I do? One of the things that was really important to me was that my children were not going to come in between my marriage. They weren't going to affect my love life. I was gonna carry on as normal. Everything was going to be fine. So I kind of put myself under the pressure to have sex really quickly after giving birth the first time. And I didn't listen to my body. And I think that was just, it was the fear factor as well. I didn't want, a lot of women can feel quite scared after having a baby of having sex again. It's a real sort of like, oh gosh. And I didn't want to feel fear for a lengthy amount of time, because I knew that it could just escalate and get worse. And you know, I really wanted to keep that togetherness between me and my husband. But I think I was just seeing it the wrong way. I wasn't sort of assured or confident enough in myself to say, hold on, is this actually something you want? Is this what your body is calling for? Or is this you just feeling like you're going to lose yourself and you're going to lose your relationship because you've had a baby?
There's that sense of obligation that you describe so well. And even the fact that your husband was also impacted by the birth and had found it a traumatic experience with your first, right? And so I think we often kind of prioritize and center the female experience, because of course she has gone through the physical pregnancy, the birth, and the recovery. But there is also this, the partner tendency of like, I don't necessarily know when she's going to be ready. And there's a perhaps a tentativeness or a fear from their perspective as well, because they don't necessarily want to hurt you. They don't want it to feel uncomfortable or painful. But at the same time, there is this unspoken expectation that we don't want to fall into the trap that we've heard about, where parents become, you know, non-intimate and sex breaks down and there isn't any of that kind of connection anymore. And so I feel like both parties carry this unspoken pressure to resume sex perhaps before they're ready and perhaps without checking in to themselves and to each other.
Yeah, I think so. And I also, when you were just speaking, I remember when I was pregnant, somebody saying to me, you know, most men cheat in the first 2 years of their children's lives. And I was like, clearly that was saying on my mind too. Like, as if I'm even bothered about that, but I clearly was.
Of
now
course.
I think about how ridiculous it is.
And I think that comes to the point that you raised about the ideal of being the good mother, of being the perfect mother, and this sense that sexuality and being a good mother that's unconditionally devoted to your child, like the two don't go together. And I think a lot of women find that really hard to reconcile, that self that is supposed to be sexually liberated and wild and free and expressive, and then this pure, perfect mother that's virtue filled and doesn't display that sexual desire in the same way. And I think it's not often spoken about, right, as one of the big taboos. But I think that journey to who am I as a sexual woman and as a mother is what many of us are navigating, you know, whether it's first time round or second time round or however many children we've gone on to have. And so I wondered how much of that played a part in your internal dialogue around the expectation of who you felt you needed to be.
Women are, we've kind of, our roles have been separated, right? We see motherhood and we see our sexuality as completely verging in different paths. And they're not. For me, it was a coming home. It was once I became a mother, my sexuality was reignited. I have a theory that, you know, our pussy and our womb is the portal of our power, right?
Yes.
So I feel like for me, it was having a child was the opening up of all of this wisdom and knowledge that I didn't know was there. And I'm still going through a big process of unshedding all of the shit that made me feel shame, that made me feel like I couldn't be a mother and I couldn't be sexual as well at the same time. There was a lot of unpacking that I'm still going through, and that's difficult.
Yeah. And when you were speaking there, what came up for me was a lot of women can feel almost shut down, like there's almost like a numbing that takes place because there's a disconnection potentially because of any birth trauma or any kind of negative association with that experience. And perhaps with breastfeeding as well, you know, having an aversion to breastfeeding or having struggled through breastfeeding, it's almost like there are parts of the body that can be disconnected from our own sense of self that we literally like put a chain around and like, okay, I'm just going to park that somewhere because that was too much. And I don't want to necessarily need to go back into that. And even if we are having sex, we're not fully present and embodied in the intimacy. And there's that sense of, you know, perhaps being disembodied from the intimacy and the experience. And so how do women who feel that sense of shutdown, that lack of libido, that sense of the pleasure as it once was experienced is not no longer there and their bodies almost don't feel like their own anymore? Because I can testify to going through that myself, you know, both after my first and with my second. How do we move from that place of numbness and shutdown to expressive, pleasure-filled freedom?
Oh, gosh, that's hard.
How did you do that? Yeah.
Well, I had a different experience. I think we're describing different experiences. I think for you, you had the opposite effect and motherhood kind of shut down your sexuality. Mm. For me, it was the beginning and opening of my sexuality. But that doesn't mean that I haven't experienced shutdown and disassociation. I think I experienced that more so before I had children. And that was probably trauma related. I guess, listen, my children are 14 and 11 now. So actually sometimes it's difficult for me to reconnect with that postpartum woman. Maybe I'm just like, you know, let's leave that where it is. So I'm sure there was some shutdown, and I probably did describe it in my book, but now I'm struggling. But I think finding your way back to yourself is a tricky process and will be different for everyone. But we have to try. We have to try and find ourselves again through the thick of it and through the busy lives and through not being the center of attention anymore. You know, you ultimately give up yourself and your life for a child. We all have that fantasy of a child ain't going to change me.
Or my relationship.
Or my life. And I'm like, hey, all right, you come back to me.
Good luck with
come
that.
Come back to me.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Everything is going to change.
Yeah.
You have no idea. And I had no idea. But for me, it has been about coming back to myself, about being present, about doing any and every type of healing work I can possibly do. Therapy, breath work, you know, Reiki, what somatic practices, whatever works. And I think our healing is often a multifaceted, multi-layered thing and approach. Yeah. I think we in modern society, we tend to give it a kind of psychological prominence that will not solve all of our problems. And if we're talking about sexuality, that's a very bodily process, and it's you've got to bring the mind and the body together in unison.
Yeah.
Because I know for me, still, when I have sex, I'm in my mind a lot. And it's really hard to get out of my head and not think, I wonder if they're enjoying it. I wonder what they can see, what kind of roles they're looking at. And, you know, it's really difficult, isn't it, to just empty your mind and actually enjoy the pleasure of what you're experiencing in that moment.
And I think that talks to your emphasis on a lot of that healing. Sounds like you took that on solo. Like, it wasn't like you saw that as a we problem at the time. You saw that as a, let me go and do what I need to do to get myself back and to feel in my fullness. Am I right in saying that?
Yes, you are definitely right in saying that. Not sure exactly why it went that way at the moment. I can be quite hyper independent. I probably took on that role myself. But most things are 50-50, right? I think I also possibly had somebody who wasn't receptive to going on that journey with me as well, which is probably ultimately why we ended up divorcing.
And I think a lot of women take on that responsibility. They take on the burden of fixing the parts of the relationship and the parts of their experience that, like you say, is actually a 50-50 journey if the partner is willing and able and has capacity to take that step. But we see it as like our failing. Like, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do as a woman, as a wife, as a mother. And so that does often lead women to doing all of the healing journey on their own, which I think you speak to in the sense that actually finding your own sexual freedom and your own kind of expression and pleasure can be a solo journey. Like, even if you are in partnership, it doesn't have to be something that relies on or depends on the other partner agreeing or you know, showing up for that. It can be something that you initiate and walk through on your own. And actually that can be incredibly empowering for a lot of women who are perhaps struggling to find the language to articulate what they're experiencing and can't necessarily ask for that space you know, claim that process as a couple. And it's like, okay, I'm just going to do what I need to do to get my head right, to get my body right. And actually reframing it in that way can be potentially a really liberating way for women to take it. It's like your relationship is not broken necessarily. It just perhaps looks, the healing might look different at this stage, you know, whereas everything else up until that point might have been healed in union. Maybe this is something that we need to take on as women to actually step into and embody, because it is our subjective experience. No matter what the partner's doing and how they're showing up and the patience that they might have, it's like we still need to be the ones who are in that space to be able to allow the pleasure in and to be able to receive and to be able to give.
Absolutely.
So what does a solo journey for that look like for you?
A solo journey for my healing?
Yeah.
First of all, it's about the willingness. It's about the desire to heal, right? If we don't admit that there is a problem or anything to be healed, then we're never gonna face it. And it's about being brave and being ready to dig into the depths of your soul and face that demon. Yeah. But I think in terms of healing, to what you just spoke about, I think ideally, ultimately, the healing has to happen independently and interdependently. I think if you can't do those two together and in tandem, then the likelihood is that you're going to verge apart, because you're doing all this healing and there's no communication with your partner. They don't know what you're experiencing. You're changing and evolving, but they're not being brought along with you. So, you know, ideally both happen at the same time in tandem.
I know what's helped me. So in terms of that sense of the fear and the shutdown that I experienced, one of the things that I really evolved into understanding was that I want intimacy and pleasure that doesn't necessarily need to be penetrative sex, right? Like, I might not be ready for that. I might not want that as often. I might not want it in the way that I wanted it before. How can we evolve so that we don't lose connection, but that intimacy can look different now? And so for me, that has been, you know, finding language and finding, you know, the work of Tantra, for example, in its truest form, and really understanding that it's about two energies who are coming together to support the pleasure of each other. And that can be done in really subtle but still powerful ways that doesn't need to look like penetrative sex all the time.
Absolutely.
I wonder if that has been a part of your journey as well.
I haven't done Tantra, actually. I did do a workshop once, but yes.
I need to explore that a bit more, I think. That is somewhere I would like to go. But I think what I heard was it was about realizing that sex doesn't necessarily look how we think it looks.
Yeah.
And exploring lots of different ways to be intimate, not just penetrative sex. And I think that can often be a real heavy focus in terms of heterosexual relationships. So when it's just penis in vagina kind of sex, there's nothing else that we kind of explore. But also it's about, you know, taking ownership that we have a right to pleasure.
That's a really important part of it. So therefore, whatever we do,
knowing that we have that right, knowing that we are not there just to service
our partner, just to be a vessel for their sperm, but there is, you know, we take space, we take ownership of that. And we have to communicate that. And I think women are often not very good at communicating what they need. And therefore, they misplace their power. We misplace our power in terms of, you know, oh, is he good in bed? Or are they good in bed?
No, actually, how are they going to be good in bed if we can't communicate what right. we need, what we like, and how we like to do it? We don't have to, you know, put all the responsibility on somebody else. We have to grab hold of it and decide that we're going to own that pleasure, that right to pleasure, just like a lot of men do.
Exactly. And taking that space and taking that opportunity to step into the power of actually having a voice sexually. Because I know for a lot of women, it's like, you know, we've been performing sex for a long time. And actually, motherhood can be the gateway of which you say, hang on a second, like, I'm grown now. I've birthed a human. Like, I'm tired. I haven't got the space and time to perform for you if I'm not getting anything from this, right? So how am I going to show up for myself in a way that means that I can actually give and receive in a way that feels good for me, and that you communicate that to the partner that you're with, you know, to give them that opportunity too, because it can be, like you described, like a really expansive growth and evolution for a woman. I don't know if I've spoken about this on the podcast before, but I know I found it really uncomfortable when I was trying to describe the arousal that motherhood was giving me, and people thought it was a bit weird, like, you know, just even breastfeeding, like, I just found it really arousing. And
I'm the same.
Yeah. And so I know there's this narrative, and I did experience this with my daughter, where it did kind of come across as a more touched out kind of feeling, like, you know, obviously the anxiety around being a first time mom and trying to get everything right, I think that played a major part, partly her temperament as well, but it just felt like that was a whirlwind of like, oh my gosh, my body's not my own. And I don't have the space to get me back. Like, I felt that, you know, visceral sense of like, just hands are on me all the time and I just need space. I need my space back. But by the time that I had my son, so there was a 2-year gap between my kids, I was like, I'm much more aware of what I'm going into. I know what to expect. And I want to savor the opportunity because I also felt like it might be my last child. And I wanted that experience to be much more embodied, right? Like, I'm not trying to escape it. I'm actually here for it. And that led to a much more sensory, sensual, like, expansive feeling of all of those stages of just like, oh my gosh, birth is actually really primal and sexual.
Absolutely.
As is breastfeeding, if you choose to breastfeed, as is the way that your hips have expanded and your curves have softened and the weight you perhaps might have gained, all of those things made me feel more womanly and more goddess-like and more empowered. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm not a little girl anymore. You know, this is like a final threshold of womanliness, you know?
It's not the final.
It's not the final, but it felt like a big one, a major threshold,
yes,
let's say.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so I wondered if how that kind of sensuality of the embodiment of new motherhood, if that kind of played up for you as well and how that showed itself.
Yeah, definitely. I can definitely connect with that right now. I never felt sexier than when I was pregnant. And you know, suddenly I didn't care about the size of my ass or you know, whether my boobs were saggy or it was like, oh my God, they're just full and voluptuous and beautiful. And yeah, so I really enjoyed that. And again, the same, there was entitlement
sounds negative, but it's like an ownership. There's a groundedness that comes with being a mother. There's a confidence that comes with evolving into this new woman. And it doesn't have to come with birthing children. It can come in other ways as you mature. But it definitely gave me the confidence to firstly ask questions, right? To explore, to be curious about my own reality and experience, because I didn't want to subject my children to a lifetime of shit sex, right? That I had already been experiencing. So how am I going to not condemn them to a lifetime of shit sex? I've got to embody it myself. I've got to go on that journey myself. I've got to claim it myself. So they gave me a reason to take up space and take that ownership for my own sexuality. Because if I want them to experience autonomy and a wonderful, pleasurable, you know, union when it comes to partnered sex, then How can I talk to them about it? How can I show them that if I haven't experienced that? If I just experienced performing, being disassociated, not feeling like it was an obligation. You know, I had to change the narrative around my own experience with sex before I could ever hope to pass that on to the next generation.
Oof. That's a word. It's a word because I'm really with how powerful an opportunity that is, especially as mothers of daughters, right? Where they are modeling their version of womanhood, you know, being in partnership, you know, potentially becoming a woman based on either what we're doing or what we're not doing, right? Either I'm going to try and emulate that and embody that, or I'm going to try and do the opposite because it clearly isn't working. Either way, they're using us as a reference. And if we don't have within our capacity, and it might not necessarily be, depending on the age of your children, it might not be that you're speaking through parts of your journey, and it might be for you, I'd be interested to hear that, but almost like the embodiment of the capacity that you're allowing yourself to take up, I feel physiologically will have an energetic impact on how they see you, how they feel you. It's like that. It's like that angst that we're holding on to as women, that pressure, that stress, the depression, like a lot of that is countered by, I believe, the capacity that we give ourselves permission to feel pleasure and embody that pleasure, because it gives us the physiological hormones to just come back into a place of ease and like oneness again. And that's the power of orgasm, right? Like I'm talking about the effects of orgasm on our nervous system, which in and of itself will then allow us to show up with a little bit less of that, you know, tightness.
So even just,
yeah, that up tightness, exactly. I'm realizing the pun on that. But yeah, like just that, I think will give the children that we're living with that example of like, okay, this is what a woman who's in her sexual power can feel like and look like. But I'd be interested to know if you did specifically speak through parts of your healing journey with your daughters. I know they're of an older age now, but you speak quite radically about the importance of being honest about what sex is and giving the our children language around sex at an earlier age, because it prepares them in a much better way than the shrouded shame that we've, you know, perhaps been raised with. So how much of your healing journey did you share?
So I had to do a lot of work in order to take away the shame that had been placed on me, placed on us. I was very sort of radical in the sense that I wanted to not just keep sex behind closed doors, not saying that I'm going to like watch my children watch me have sex, but I'm going to introduce sex in a very natural way, like we do talking about, you know, our arms or our legs. Different, it's just a different body part, and there's so much shame and secrecy around it that I really wanted to overcome.
We're not going to take away all of that shame, because they pick up that shame at school and in just being in society. But for me, talking about sex doesn't have an age appropriate time. There's no set timing. It's like, why are we not talking about it as soon as they're ready to ask the questions? Why are we not giving them the information? If they are cognitive enough to ask a question about sex, they are old enough to get the correct answer. I'm not going to talk about fairy tales and stories and cabbages and storks and all that shit. They are going to get the real information, because why wouldn't they? There's nothing wrong with it. And this sense that we have to shield children from knowing the real truth of sex only makes them more vulnerable and more of a target to predators. Because when they don't know what is happening, when they don't have a name for different parts of their body, that's when they are easily preyed on. So it's not just about not condemning them to a shit life of sex, a life of shit sex. It is also a safeguarding issue. If we don't give a language, if we don't eradicate the embarrassment and the shame around sex, then children don't feel able to talk to us about stuff. When and if something horrible happens to them, they don't know who to go to. All they know is they've been told, or they picked up, that they can't talk about this stuff. So where do they go with that?
It's true. And I know when I read that part of your book, and I know you've spoken about this before publicly, that I found it really confronting, you know, because I have kind of put a bit of a framework around sex, where I've said to my daughter, I understand that you're able to ask the question, and I understand that you are aware that it is something, but I don't want to talk to you about it yet. I don't feel like it's a conversation that we're ready to have yet. And that, I think, came from a fear that actually the more she would know at that age, it would kind of make it something that would be titillating, that would be spoken about in a you know, a reductive way in the playground. And I know there's always going to be kids who bring that anyway. But for me, it was like, I do want you to hold some sense of sacredness and sovereignty around it. And I know that you speak about sometimes that being too much pressure for women, you know, the sense that, you know, virginity needs to be the thing that we protect at all costs. And that can sometimes be really problematic. And I've sat with that since reading your book, because I was like, actually, I have held that. I was raised with that. And it's one of the things that I've kind of chosen to continue in a way. And so I wonder how you match the kind of biological reality of, you know, children have questions and they're curious and they want to understand certain things with the emotional and spiritual ramifications of sex as well. Like, is that conversation happening alongside one and the other, or how have you navigated that?
So when you talk about ramifications, are you talking about the fear-based aspects around sex?
No, more just the kind of, the way that I see it held in mainstream is quite like dismissive. Like, it's a fact, it's going to happen, you're going to do it, this is how it works. Whereas for me, it really does feel like a spiritual connection.
Absolutely.
With someone. And so I think because there isn't that language introduced at a young age, it leaves this void around it that for me is really important to frame and center. And so because I want her to think of it in that way, I've held back personally from exploring it just in its biological sense. But I've been thinking about it because I realized that that's also a kind of, it's a symptom of Western separation thinking, you know, where we've like compartmentalized everything into its, you know, component parts and categories. And actually more of an African-centered view is that children do speak about sex or are aware of it because of nature, because of farming, because of
and
agriculture.
It's not hidden.
It's not hidden. Mm. But there is also this kind of this spiritual education that's happening from a very young age, which I also think is missing for our children in the West. So I guess I'm aware of the lack of both of those conversations, and I'm trying to bring them both together at the same time.
But how are you going to bring them together if you don't have the conversation in the first place, right? And I'm going to really challenge you here. Whose needs are you centering when you are saying, I don't think you're ready for that yet? Whose needs are you centering? Because to me, it feels like it's coming from a you place, right? Mm. And also, you said something about, I want her to have whatever. It's not your choice. It is not your choice how your child views sex when they're older. You can give them the tools, but you saying you want them to have, you know, view sex as this embodiment practice and keep that kind of sacredness, it's a lovely expectation or desire to have.
Yeah.
But you, again, that is not your choice. But I do definitely agree with you. Sorry, I've been really challenging there.
No, I take it. I'm here for it. And I'm sitting with it. I'm like, okay.
But I do definitely agree with you. And don't get me wrong, when I say that women's virginity has been policed and controlled, does not mean that I don't think sex is sacred.
Mm.
I do think sex is sacred. I think that when we have sex, when there is a union or any sort of intimate coming together of two people, it's an incredible, vulnerable, sacred, embodied moment between, I don't underestimate the impact that I feel and experience during that moment. I just think it's up to us, right? We choose how we show up when and wherever we are in that journey, in that process. And I have also had to really confront my own expectations that I put on my children. Because I think when we have rigid expectations for our children, it sets them and us up to fail.
Mm. Yeah.
Because they don't, they might not necessarily live up to your expectations. And then what do you do?
Right. And it's, I guess it's a reflection on, you know, feeling into some of the things that I was raised with and going through that discernment of, okay, I see where that was coming from. You know, I take that, it served me well. And maybe I'm going to leave that, that didn't serve me so well. And I think that through that distillation process and through that conversation with my partner, the two of us have been able to say, okay, what are the things that we hold sacred around that subject? And what do we want our children to be able to take from that? And so it, I guess there is that inbuilt expectation that they might frame it in that way and understand it in that way. And then obviously if they choose to, you know, expand that and, you know, move from that definition, then at least it's the one that we've agreed that we want to impart, you know? Mm-hmm. But I'm sitting with it because obviously I've managed to dodge it up until this point because I'm like, babes, we're going to get there. And I want us to have that conversation. I just want us to be clear, as in me and my husband be clear on what the overarching messaging is that we're imparting. And she respected that. She was like, okay, we'll come back to it when we've decided we're going to have that conversation. But it did just raise that question for me, having read that and having heard your opinion on it, was like, actually, how much of that is coming from a me place? And is that giving her more of a service or is it doing her more of a disservice? You know, because I could really sense what you were saying about the need for safety and the need for awareness and the need for language. And I really do feel that Absolutely. That is massively important, both in the real life space and digital space that, you know, our kids are increasingly, you know, present in. So,
yes, yeah. If it doesn't come from us, it's going to come from someone.
It's going to come
right?
from somewhere. Exactly. Exactly.
But also, children are naturally curious. What is more curious? Something they see every day, something that is talked about every day, something that is out in the open and freely expressed every day, or something that is behind a closed door, or something that is in the dark,
or children, forbidden.
Yeah. Yes, that is so much more enticing than something that we speak about very freely. My suggestion for you would be to stop making it into such a big thing. You're like, I've had this discussion with him. We're, you know, it's such a huge thing. Go back to the natural, the spiritual side of it. Bring it into everyday conversation. Tell your child to ask all of the questions. You're ready for it. You've experienced everything she needs to know. There's nothing that should be taboo. Because you want to have that open, free dialogue with your child.
Of course, that's the biggest aim. Yeah, to have the openness and to have the trust and to have the listening. That is exactly the biggest aim. And I wonder if you'd heard Jada Pinkett recently. She wrote her memoir, Worthy. And she shared, I think she shared openly anyway, but she's spoken about the fact that her grandmother was the one who taught her about masturbation and about receiving pleasure and about giving herself pleasure. And that was really controversial. You know, there was a lot of people like, you know, the people had a lot to say about it. Let's just say that. And so I think that's perhaps, you know, the other end of the spectrum where there is a kind of a real openness to be like, okay, and this is how that might look and this is what you might experience and I'm going to show you some ways of doing that. And I just wondered how those conversations have looked over the years for you and your daughters and how much of the work that you do are they aware of, or is it at the point where it's like it's so blasé they've probably gone the other way where it's like, okay, mom, I've had enough. Yes, we know like about all of the things.
That is the latter.
going back to masturbation that you were talking about, it's free, it's pleasurable, it's a woman taking ownership over her own body, finding out what she likes, what she doesn't like. It has so many benefits that aren't traumatizing, like sex, as we all know, can be. Why aren't we telling all of our children to explore their own bodies? I have no idea why there is so much controversy and shame around masturbation. To me, it is such a logical step in safeguarding, in kid, you know, girls taking ownership and being empowered in their own sexuality, feeling like they can say no, and just communicate in general. I didn't know that I could explore my own body and could touch my own body. And as soon as I kind of realized that, hold on, why am I not doing this more? Why am I waiting for permission? Why do I think I'm such a terrible person for something that is so wonderful and freeing and so much less risky than sex? Why is that not being promoted more? It's, to me, it just seems so illogical, and we have twisted it so much that it's like we're not even making sense anymore.
I think just not knowing the, you know, societal stems, but I would say religion, number one, has really kind of twisted, you know, played a massive role in that. Suppression of female sexuality, number two, like, you know, whether we're talking about the, in the extreme, like FGM, or we're talking about these overriding, you know, good girl messaging that girls receive, yeah, around how they're supposed to be sexually. And there are so many conflicting, just messages that don't make sense.
And ultimately, it is all about control.
Yeah, it is about control.
The thing is what we have lost touch with is the power of our sexuality. Our sexuality is so feared and so powerful that they are doing everything possible to disconnect us from that power.
Yeah.
And if they can control it, if they can make us feel shame for it, if they can tell us that we shouldn't have any kind of ownership over that power, they have us within their control.
So you see this as almost like a retribution of, like, you know, the severing that society has done over the ages on women's bodies. And so it's this reclamation of your own power and your own, yes, pleasure and your, yes, own expression of that, which I love.
Yeah. And your own freedom, ultimately.
Yeah.
If you can, yeah, control a woman's sexuality, you control a woman.
And so has that been the way that you've framed it for yourself and for your daughters at different stages and ages?
Yeah. I mean... it's just spoken about so much that it's now just part of our everyday language. And I would never kind of like shame them or tell them that they can't do something. I'm very, you know, it's your body, you can touch it. As long as you're in private, you know, it's all yours. It's all yours. Go and have fun.
Yeah.
So I think I've kind of demystified it, is what I'm trying to say. I've demystified it. I've brought it into the room. It you know, it's like, and that ultimately has helped me eradicate my own shame, my own embarrassment, and upbringing around what I've known around sex, because it wasn't something I was used to either, like talking about sex. But the more you do it, the more you drop it in to everyday conversations, little nuggets here and there, you know, and just remind them that they can ask questions. What is coming up for them? Because again, if they're not asking you, they will find out the answer somewhere else.
It's true.
You just won't know about it.
And so what I'm hearing you say is that, you know, that taking on of the healing that comes with the shifts and changes that happen through motherhood, through each of those stages, and really, really embodying your own sexual expression and journey is not only going to give you space and freedom to talk to your children, but it's also going to potentially free a lot of that shame that they would otherwise inherit from other messaging, from other, absolutely, people, from other places. And yeah, that is such a gift that we have as women and as mothers to other humans, is that we get to be able to share from this place of, okay, this is also what I'm learning, this is also what I'm navigating, this is also what I'm going through.
And, you know, communication isn't just verbal, right? So if we're going on this sort of embodiment journey through with sex ourselves, that will permeate.
down to your children, whether you like it or not, even if it's not spoken about.
Yeah, I sense that. And I sense that a lot of women, almost hearing that, it might incentivize them more. Because, you know, when it's just something for us and our benefit, it's like, okay, well, maybe that's not the priority. But then when we bring our children back into the frame and it's like, oh, wait, this is actually going to impact them deeply one way or the other. I think a lot of women are much more like, oh, yeah, this is not just a me. This is not just a me thing. This is not only going to potentially benefit my partnership if I'm in partnership, but the ways that my children sense me and experience me as their mother. And that's a powerful gift.
It really is.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing that. And thank you for the challenge, because I'm here for it. And these are the conversations that I want us to be able to shine lights on as women and in the Soul Mom community, to be able to say, okay, I may have been raised with some things that have held me in a particular place, but with the openness and curiosity and a willingness to listen, perhaps we might gain something and shift something and, you know, and change and adapt in a way that benefits us and our families. So thank you for sharing that. So honestly, I really appreciate it.
And question, just remind yourself to ask questions of yourself. Why am I thinking that? Why am I holding that mentality around it? Is that mine? Is that the truest form of myself? You know, I think we do definitely. You brought up you talked about Africa and sort of go back to the roots, go back to the start, and is this an expression of naturalness and how it's supposed to be, or is this the society and colonialism and all of those other things that we have taken
inherited
on? Yes, we are relics of colonialism, and we have to, if we don't accept that, if we don't challenge that, if we don't know that we are perpetuating that, then we're fools, because we are, and we have taken that on, and it's impossible to not, because colonialism is in our blood.
Yeah, it's in the water. And I think that sense that actually taking this journey is part of an opportunity to decolonize our own thinking, our own conditioning, I'm really recognizing that in all of the ways, whether it's patriarchy or, you know, through race, how that's shown up, you know, being an embodied brown woman, what has that been, you know, sexually construed to be? And that's a whole next conversation that we do not have time to unpack today, but it's such a ripe invitation to really just take the thoughts that we have, the fears that we have, and to go back to the roots of where these come from, and to have the space to unpack that in a safe way, so that we can be conscious of the things that we're imparting to our children, and to know why. And so it brings us into our reflections on your motherhood journey so far. You mentioned that your kids are like 14 and 11 now. And so I would say you're kind of, you're knee deep, you're in it, right? Like you're into the teenage stage. And I just wondered, like, looking back on your motherhood journey, specifically as it's pertained to what we've been speaking about today, what is the thing that you're most proud of?
I think the thing I'm most proud of is having the courage to challenge
myself, challenge my thinking, being able to pivot and change and evolve my expectations around motherhood.
You know, we're so used to thinking, oh, if I had my time again, this is what I would do differently. Or, you know, this is what I know I've already messed up. Or this is what I know my kids are going to be going to therapy for in 5 years or whatever. But I really want us to take that moment to be like, well, there are a lot of things that we're doing right, that we're proud of, and that we can see manifesting in a really positive way in our children.
Yeah. And I think that's such a lovely and very powerful question, and you're absolutely right. We don't ask ourselves enough, what are we doing right? We focus on what we're doing wrong. I already know I'm going to fuck my kids up. I already know they're going to go for therapy. As you said, That's a given, right? But what am I proud of? I'm proud of challenging
the ways that I thought I was supposed to be. I'm proud that I started asking questions.
Having kids is a very brave and courageous thing to do, and deciding to also do it and fuck off all the expectations of motherhood as well is even braver, because, you know, there's a lot of things people will criticize me for, but there is a lot of things that I will say, I don't give a fuck about your opinion of me and how you think I'm a mother. This feels right to me.
Amen.
That's important.
Yes, yes, yes. I feel you. I feel you on that. And I think that's what you've done with, you know, your brand and the work that you've done and all of the things that I've heard you speak on, is that I'm willing to say what nobody else is saying. I'm willing to speak to my truth, you know, whether it's controversial or not. And in doing so, I'm walking my talk. I'm living my truth, and I'm living that example for my children. Whether they choose to follow it or not is up to them. But this is the gift that I'm giving by just doing me honestly. So thank you for being that presence in the world.
Pleasure.
And my last question, again, I ask all my guests this, but for women listening who are hearing this for the first time, perhaps, and perhaps haven't come to a clarity around where they are sexually, or perhaps they're in that, you know, postpartum shutdown phase, or perhaps they're wanting and desiring, you know, the benefits of that sexual freedom and liberation and pleasure, what's one thing that they could take away or do or apply for themselves that you would impart to them?
Get out of your own way is the main sort of gateway to taking back that ownership and acknowledging that you know, the stories that we tell ourselves can be really inhibiting and limiting. And we need to challenge that. And the only way we can challenge that is by getting out of our way, deciding that we deserve things, we deserve pleasure, we deserve to go on a healing journey, we deserve to have that therapy session, we deserve to have to buy that course, to try tantric yoga, tantric sex, to try new things. You know, we have to claim it, we have to take ownership, we have to stop dumbing down our needs and our desires and assuming that they're going to be handed to us, assuming that everyone else has got some form of psychic ability, that they're just going to know what we need. They don't. We have to communicate it. We have to have the confidence to speak up about what we want and what we need, and know that we are worthy of it. Is that what I don't know? Is that one thing that I went on a bit of a...
No, that was a whole sermon. But I'm here for it. I'm here for it, because that's exactly the sentiment. We are worthy of all of that what you just described. And I think that's a beautiful note to conclude for today.
Yeah.
And so for women who want to get in touch with you, follow your work, where can we find you?
At Soul Me Sunday, that's the place, on Facebook, on Instagram, and my website, soulmesunday.co.uk.
Oh, Alexis, thank you so much for all of your words of wisdom today.
Thank you.
Yeah, the journey continues. It's never done, right? Whether it's healing, whether it's motherhood, it's a continuous evolution. But I'm really here for the women who are able to claim that and show up for themselves and to shine a light for the ones who are still navigating that, so that we know that we're not alone as we're doing it. And we're in it together. You know,
we are. And just know that you are worthy of it. You are worthy of all of it. So whatever that it is for you, fucking go for it.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that conversation and got what you needed from it. For me, the biggest takeaway was really understanding that sexuality is something that's ever evolving. It's not a static thing or place that we stay. You know, it can be something that we ebb and flow and continuously evolve and push our thinking around. And so for me, I really was grateful to have that challenge and to have the space to just go deeper on a subject that many of us don't get space and time to talk about. And that's what this season of the podcast is all about. We're going to be having those hard conversations and shining a light on those places that often stay in the shadows. So if you are here for the growth, you're here for the healing, you're here for all of the goodness, stay tuned. Next week, we'll be speaking to Tamu Thomas. We'll be talking all things toxic productivity. You can follow me on Instagram at Soul Mama Journey. And there I share lots of tips and knowledge about all of the things to do with healing on this motherhood journey. And I would love to hear from you. If there were things that came up for you personally, if there were things that you had questions about, if there were things that you were not so sure about but wanted to go deeper on, and even if you just want to suggest a guest or anything, I am here for all of it. So please jump over to Instagram and follow me there so we can chat in the DMs. And in the meantime, stay healthy and stay blessed. Thank you so much for listening to the Soul Mama podcast. You can head over to soulmamajourney.com for more resources and ways that I can support you on your journey. I'm most active on Instagram, so you can follow me at Soul Mama Coach. Also, get in touch with me via email at nahanda@soulmamajourney.com. I read and respond to every single message. It takes me ages, but I really love hearing from you. Please take a moment to rate it wherever you've listened. And if you feel like you've got some value from this, please share it with another mother. I appreciate you. Thank you.